please join me in welcoming Mallory Brown.
Hello. Wait, can you hear me? This is on. Perfect. Great, thank you guys for coming. Thanks for choosing my section. Thank you for staying two in a row. I must have been worthwhile. Hopefully you heard this buzz that I'm just an incredible speaker out in the hallway, so you guys all came in to see that. Is that what happened? You looked over at me when my picture came on this morning on the screen to like give me a little pump up. Thanks, I appreciate that. Okay, so hello, my name is Mallory Brown. You guys can, wait, I was learning how to do this. There we go. You guys can call me Travel Mal. This is my nickname. It's also the name of my company. So I'm a social entrepreneur. I started my own company. I'm one of those like single women on a mission trying to go help people around the world. But I started as an entrepreneur when I was 24 years old. I'm now 32, so I've been 8 years as a professional do-gooder. So it's not actually a job title, a professional do-gooder, but I call myself an impact storyteller. Can you just go next? So I travel the world and I tell stories that create an impact. The great part about my stories is that they're real life stories, and I use them to empower other people to create an impact. So I pick out grassroots nonprofits around the world and I travel to them, like this one in Ethiopia, and I tell a very creative story with photo and video, almost like a mini documentary film on the ground. And then I use that story to raise awareness and to spread the message of that nonprofit. And then I publish crowdfunding campaigns so that the average everyday person, when you're sitting in your cubicle, you can watch that video on YouTube and you can click a link to donate directly to help the nonprofit. My goal is to connect people that are here that want to give back and they're not really sure how, and provide them really unique, creative, engaging, direct ways to impact people around the world. So I have been operating in this form for 8 years. I found that, can you go next? The way that I work is really very successful because many people, especially in my generation, want to give back, they want to make an impact, but they don't want to send money in the mail to a charity and never know where it goes. They're not really sure where to start. And I provide them with a really like small lift, you know, like there's something very easy they can do and rally and be a part of something that creates incredible change around the world. So you go next. So this is a photo of me in Cambodia. I am with my videographer. And so we're talking to the donors and we're saying, you know, like, this is exactly where your money is going. If you're in any sort of corporate environment, this is basically like the equivalent of the best customer service that you could have. You know, like, imagine the next time that you buy an iPhone and then you get a message from someone in Apple headquarters saying, like, thanks so much for buying this iPhone. And if you have any questions, just let us know. We're here for you. You know, it's like the really personalized way to approach philanthropy. And it works incredibly well. So I've raised hundreds of thousands of dollars for really small grassroots nonprofits. I've raised even more money than that in goods and services given away to all of these passion projects for me. And so this is the areas of the world that I have worked. So I've been to 45 countries, and I've picked a variety of different causes. You'll notice the U.S. is on there. I'm sort of known as being this international girl who most people who know me think I'm, like, I live in Africa or something, but I do domestic projects as well. I'm actually from Detroit, so I grew up in Farmington Hills. I went to Albion College, and then when I graduated from college, I rewarded myself with a backpacking trip to Southeast Asia. I went because I wanted to ride an elephant. That was my impetus for going. When I went, I discovered tons of incredible people that live in extreme poverty, that have beautiful cultures, very different from my own, and I learned to truly love and value them and what they were bringing to my life. And I thought, I'm going to create my whole life's work around helping people like that, people that I've met. And so I come from a background of in the media industry. I come from a family of filmmakers. And so I decided to take the skill sets that I have and to help those individual people on the ground. And so this has created my whole career. And the more successful that I get, the more I start to mentor people and guide people as to how to turn your passion into something tangible, how to make your work meaningful, and how to add impact into your life. I mean, not everybody is going to be a world traveler helping impoverished villages in Cambodia. That's what I do, but that's not necessarily what you're going to do. People want their life to mean something. They want their effort to go towards something good. We all want to help people. And so hopefully through my presentation and through some tips I give you at the end, you guys can figure out ways that you can add empathy into your life. You can create a better impact, a positive impact to the people around you. So I want to show you an example of my work, easier to show than to tell. So my next campaign is called Walk a Mile. It's based on the concept of walking a mile in someone else's shoes. Arguably the most iconic form of empathy. And I am walking a marathon broken up into 1 mile segments. Every mile I'm stepping into the shoes of an impoverished woman around the world that's working to pull her family out of poverty. It's a documentary series and it's filmed in 26 locations around the world featuring 26 different women. And every single episode has an associated nonprofit on the ground, a women's empowerment nonprofit that's helping to support local women. So you could go on YouTube, you can watch mile number one of me walking with a woman named Gisela in Honduras, and you can click a link and donate directly to help her in Honduras. This series is my main project right now. It's not yet launched to the public, but it launches on Giving Tuesday this year, which is November 27th. So I'm going to give you guys a sneak peek. I'm going to play for you the first episode of Walk a Mile. You are now the second people to see it because the first session were the first people to see it, but this is the second time I'm playing it live. So I hope you enjoy.
lo quiero mucho, es mi nuevo amigo y es muy tranquilo y muy alegre. Qué bueno, ¿verdad? Muchas gracias por venir el día de hoy. Otro mes más para el peso y talla de sus niños. El día de hoy,
Gisela probably wears out a pair of tennis shoes a week. I mean, she walks hours on end every single day in the roughest terrain to reach these super remote villages to run a nutritional program. 5 days a week, 52 weeks a year. She reaches 60 villages in the poorest part of Honduras, and in every village, she helps the moms give better nutrients to their kids.
Las familias son muy pobres, no tienen mucho acceso a los alimentos y no hay trabajo.
This is the epitome of living in poverty. Infant mortality rates are so astronomically high. The mother is at risk, the child is at risk. There's no access to any sort of health care. There's no access to birth control, there's no access to doctors. I mean, you are just trying to make it totally on your own. It's amazing to see the moms in the room watching Gisela, listening to her so intently because they're really trying to be good parents.
It truly is the most basic form of care. It's just a mom trying to provide for her child. In this community, how many kids are malnourished?
One or two or sometimes five.
So all the moms from the village come out and they bring their tiny little children to Gisela, who weighs them, measures them, their height, how much they're growing, and marks it all on a schedule that the moms can keep so they can track how well their child is progressing. So they mix this with water or milk. They give it to the child once a day. So this is 30 days of proper nutrition per kid. You know, do they have enough nutrients? Are they growing? Are they going to be a healthy child? But this one is really close to being malnourished.
Yeah.
They need to feed their child more, but they just don't have the food. So doing this for 10 years, do you see that nutrition is getting better?
Sí, sí, he mejorado un poco. Siempre los suplementos que se están dando ayudan a las madres.
Me siento feliz al ver las familias cuánto se benefician con este producto.
You feel for them, you know? It's like a difficult life, and they just want their kids to be healthy. And Gisela is single-handedly helping 60 communities. I'm in awe of the quest that she's on. I mean, she loves her work, and she feels such a responsibility to take care of her people, because she is walking miles on end to reach these families who need her. The need is so great, but the cost of the solution is so small. A year supply of nutritional packets for one child is 500 lempiras. That's $20. I mean, $20.
Pues sí, dar las gracias principalmente porque, mire, aquí hablando la realidad, aquí...
Un tiempo yo tenía un niño así desnutrido, pero ya hoy que han entrado a este programa, ya han cambiado bastante.
Pues les pedimos de corazón, ¿verdad?, de que nos sigan apoyando. Estos niños lo necesitan y pues así vamos a tener, pues vamos a salir adelante como municipio, como un país. Pues vamos a tener en el futuro, pues.
Your donations go directly to buying more nutritional packets, which go directly to Gisela and then directly to the people that really need them. You probably have in your pocket right now what it takes to feed one child for a whole year. Please donate to my Just Giving fundraiser and help these kids. Please donate. Thank you. Hope you guys are clapping for Gisela. I mean, I know the video quality was really great, but that woman is so impressive. She is out there every single day walking to the next village. I mentioned in the beginning that I wanted to talk to you guys about empathy. And there's just a quick vocab lesson, but there's a difference between empathy and sympathy. So sympathy is feeling sorrow or feeling pity for someone. And empathy is trying to understand what life looks like from their perspective. I try not to feel any sympathy for people. I mean, if I want to feel sorry for them, that's, you know, a personal choice. But, like, my work is not in sympathy of anyone. But it is entirely in empathy. I'm trying to understand what life is like for them in ways that I can help in a non-judgmental, non-biased way. I enter into cultures very different from my own, with open eyes, open heart, curiosity, because I'm trying to learn from them. And I've honestly learned more from impoverished people than I've learned from anyone in my own wealthy community in Metro Detroit. Impoverished people, the dedication of that woman, I could never do that, to walk every single day of my life to go help people. And she does it. And that sort of respect level that I have is the reason that I'm able to impact people. It's because they welcome me and they share their story openly. I have incredible relationships with these nonprofits. And I'm in awe of the work that they do. Honestly, it's truly incredible. And so I lead with this position of empathy, of non-judgment, and of an openness and a willingness to help. And it's a reciprocal relationship on both ends. So on Giving Tuesday, this campaign will go live. I have incredible friends and family and donors and supporters, and Walk a Mile is powered entirely by women. So women sign up to help and fundraise underneath me. So there will be a bunch of women that are all trying to raise money from their friends and family on that same day. And then there's groups of women that are all fundraising to help these women around the world. You can be a man and still donate. So like all of you men in the audience, you can donate to the fundraisers, but they are powered by women, which is very cool. And just because you're the Detroit Economic Club and you guys probably are curious about the business behind this, I'll explain to you how I actually operate with the businesses of my job. So Walk a Mile is funded by 26 Power Women donors. These are individual women that donate to my nonprofit. So they're donating to the production of Walk a Mile. I pair that woman with a mile she's sponsoring, which is one story, one location, one nonprofit. And the goal is that I amplify their donation. So it costs less to fund me to work, and I'll publish a fundraiser and we'll raise more money for the cause. So when Walk a Mile is published, it'll be 26 fundraisers, and my goal is to raise $1 million through crowdfunding. So I work as an amplification of donations. So I have walked 5 miles so far, 3 in Central America. You just watched one of them. 1 in Eastern Europe, 1 in the Middle East, and I'm filming 3 more episodes in a month in Central Africa. I'm also doing one in Detroit. It's going to benefit the Empowerment Plan, which is a great nonprofit run by Veronica Scott, who is speaking in the main room in a couple sessions. Veronica started a nonprofit that employs women who were homeless and teaches them how to sew coats that turn into sleeping bags that are then given to the homeless. It's a great organization based in Detroit. So I'm going to walk with one of the women who used to be homeless, and she can show me what her daily life is, teach me what her job is, and how this nonprofit has supported her. So that's a great one if you guys are diehard about giving locally. I find that people everywhere have the same basic needs, and I can tell a story in Central Africa or in Central Kansas, and there's pretty much the same needs going on. We're all human. We all have the same problems. We speak different languages and we believe different religions, so somehow that causes some sort of divide, but all problems are the same everywhere. So just a little bit of background about me, just a quick personal story as to why I became the way that I am. You can go to the next slide. I put my heart into my job, and I'm really the guiding force, as any creative entrepreneur is. And this is this model of empathy has been ingrained in me since I was young. So this is a photo of me and my younger brother. The photo on the left right there is the first picture we ever took. I was 2, and he was just born. He was born 3 months premature, and he has severe cerebral palsy. So my brother's name is Derek, and he has never walked or talked or held himself up or fed himself. He's basically a grown man who is in a baby's body. And he's now 29 years old. This is him on the right. This is what he looks like today. My brother taught me empathy from an early age because we were born to the same family in the same economic status, in the same school district. We have the same family values, and we should have had the same opportunities in life, and we didn't by any stretch of the imagination. Derek has never taken a step in his life, and I've been to 45 countries. And right there, it taught me at an early age not to judge people based on their circumstance, because circumstances are out of your control. And so my brother is truly the motivation behind everything that I do, and my feelings towards him have amplified and are now my feelings towards people in need all around the world. So you can go to the next slide. So these are some photos of my travels. And I know that you guys may not be going to Madagascar, which that's where that bottom left photo is taken, whereas I do this because I love this and this is my job. But there are ways that you can embrace people that are different from you with empathy. You can look at the coworker you don't get along with, or the family member that you don't get along with, or probably the most comparable scenario is how you treat homeless people. How do you treat a homeless person when you pull up next to them in your car? Most people stare awkwardly ahead, waiting for the light to change, like super fast, because this is an awkward thing, and I kind of feel bad for this guy, but I don't want to give him any money, and he's probably just going to go buy drugs, and I'm not going to do that. If I had food, maybe I'd give him food, but I don't have food, and I'm not going to give him money. Like, this is what goes through everyone's head when you're sitting next to a homeless person. I would challenge you that the next time you're standing next to a homeless person, roll down your window and ask them their name. Like, don't give them any money. You don't have to do that. Just ask them their name. You'll probably be very surprised by the response that you get. I'll tell you a quick story. So I was doing a project for homelessness domestically, and I was interviewing a bunch of homeless people. And one of the men, his name was Billy, and he was very open in sharing his story with me. He was a veteran. He'd been homeless for 20 years, on the streets for 20 years. He only had 4 teeth left in his mouth. And contrary to popular belief, not all homeless people are drug addicts or addicts. He was sober. He didn't do drugs or drink alcohol. He had been homeless because he couldn't find a job when he got back from the military, and he had PTSD, which didn't go treated, and he couldn't get on his feet again. And so Billy was very open in sharing his story with me, and so I told him, I'm going to get you dentures. I'm going to do a fundraiser. I'm going to try to raise the money. Even if I can't raise the money, I will just pay for them. No one should be walking around with 4 teeth in their mouth. I'll get you dentures. So 2 days later, I picked Billy up, 2 p.m. on a Thursday on his street corner. I drove him to a dentist's office. Dr. Utley, very nice man, gave him full dentures. And I went to pay the bill at the end, and Dr. Utley said, this one's on me. I had been wanting to give back to my community, and I didn't really know how. And then this woman showed up with a homeless man who needed dentures, and this is my gift to you, no charge. Incredible. So Billy got his dentures, the doctor got to give back, and all that I really did was drive Billy from his street corner to the dentist office. So then when I tell that story, my question is really, why did it take 20 years for someone to drive him to a dentist's office? Sometimes it's really, really small touch points, really small actions that turn into incredible impact. And that's what I've found with all of my work, is that you guys want to help. If I email you this Honduras story and you know that $20 is gonna give a year supply of those packets to a kid in Honduras, you probably want to give that $20. You just need the opportunity to do so. And so I've created an entire career trying to open these doors of opportunity for impact. I think I'm running super low on time. We'll just pass them through the poll questions. But I'll leave you with this. So these are 5 tenets that I live by that you guys can try to incorporate in your life. I believe that people are good. People are so good. Working in poverty is kind of like working with humanity 1,000 years ago. And you see, the core of people are wonderful. And it's circumstances that make people make bad decisions or turn negative, you know, but people in their heart are good. And if you can find that goodness, if you can see the good in people, if you see the good in Billy, the homeless man with four teeth, you can create an impact in his life. Kindness is everywhere, and now you guys can stir up some kindness. Start doing small acts of kindness. Kindness is like anything in life, it's momentum. You know, in sales, when sales are good, like, it's rolling good and it builds momentum. Same thing when things are not going well. You know, when it rains, it pours. Kindness works the same way. Small little acts. Compliment someone. I compliment, what's your name, second row?
Kelly.
She stayed for two sessions. Like, how amazing is that? You know, like, that was a really nice act of kindness towards me, and I'm acknowledging her right now. If you live your life doing these tiny little acts of kindness, big ways to make an impact will show up, and they will just reveal themselves to you. The third one, diversity should be celebrated. Surround yourself with diversity. Now, you don't have to go fly across the world and sit in a hut with people chanting and speaking different languages. Just drive a different way to work tomorrow. See things a little differently at your dinner table. Switch it around. Sit on the opposite side. You know, sit where your spouse normally sits. Try a different place at work. Sit with different people at work. If you put yourself, if you get yourself out of your comfort zone, that's when you'll start to see opportunities to make an impact. The fourth one, change is possible. So you guys can brace for change. This is arguably the most important one. Because when I approached Billy to give him dentures, I didn't say, you know, I'm going to try to get you dentures, but if I don't raise the money, then maybe we can just do a cleaning and we'll, like, polish up those four teeth you have and get some fluoride and, like, it'll be better than what you got. Like, if that was my attitude, Billy would not have dentures. I approached this like there's no way that at the end of this week this man doesn't have a full mouth of teeth. And I'll pay for it, I'll fundraise for it, whatever I gotta do. And then he got dentures, and it ended up being that the dentist was a wonderful man, but he wouldn't have, it wouldn't have ended up that way if I had not seen and braced for the change to happen. I just expect this stuff to happen. Walk a Mile's gonna raise $1 million. For me to have that attitude is the only way it's gonna happen. And the last one, I believe one person can make a difference, so go make a difference. It's really not that hard. All I'm teaching you guys is to take touch points, small points of empathy. When that email is sent to you on Giving Tuesday, give the $20. Donate to Honduras. Say yes to stuff. Help people. Put change in the meter when you see that someone's meter is expiring. The person doesn't even have to be there. Like, you don't need to get credit for it. Just do it. You guys are smart people. We see these opportunities all day and we say no because we don't have to. But if you start doing little acts, you will create a bigger impact. So that's it. Thank you guys.
So thank you so much. So I know we only have time for a couple of questions. So I'll just kick this off with, so how did you initially start finding donors to give?
That's a good question. I find donors in two ways. One is just like I'm kind of really gutsy, and I look at ideal lists of people that I want to donate, and I contact their assistant, or I like weasel my way in, and I get a coffee meeting with them, and I sit them down, and I make a really good case, and my work is really good, and it's proven to work, and I just ask. Like, so many people are afraid to ask. They're afraid to, like, take this leap. I really tried it. When I talk to donors, I have the attitude of, like, how would you approach this conversation if you had no fear? If I had no fear at all, what would I do here? And so I do that. My first major donor ever was Hank Meyer, who's the CEO of Meyer. I drove to Grand Rapids. I met him in his corporate office for lunch. He had no idea who I was. I mean, he had like agreed to this lunch, but I was a stranger. I sat him down, I made my case, I asked him for money, and he said yes. Simple as that. So I ask a lot, and then also I look for people that have supported me in small ways, like Kelly, who clearly likes what I do because she's been here twice. Like, I'm going to ask her to sign up to help me fundraise on Giving Tuesday. Like, look for people that support you in small ways and then roll with that. No pressure, but like, yeah. So one of my major donors now, he donated to my first ever online fundraiser, and I contacted him and sent him a personal thank you note, and that relationship has grown, and he's turned into one of my major gift donors.
So speaking of some local work that Kelly is now going to be spearheading for you, tell us about, I know you mentioned the empowerment plan, but tell us a little bit about what other things you're doing in the U.S.
Mm-hmm. So I did a big campaign a couple years ago for a homeless barbecue that happens in Detroit. It happens every Saturday afternoon. It's called Elevate Detroit. It's right by the Masonic Temple, so it's at 4th and Temple. So every Saturday, it's a community barbecue. It's open to everyone. The homeless are invited, but everyone can go. It's volunteer-driven. And I did a one-day-long fundraiser to raise money to buy a vacant lot, fix it up, turn it into a park, and donate it to the barbecue so that they had a location to work every Saturday. So I published this fundraiser online, crowdfunding, so people are giving $10, $20. We raised $25,000, $28,000 in one day. The very next day, we got landscaping services out. We built a pavilion. We got park tables, picnic benches, new grill, whole bunch of food. Local restaurants chimed in, and we had this kickoff barbecue. It now happens every single Saturday from 1 to 4 p.m. You guys can all go. But I do work like that to help organizations that can then sustain it, sustain that change. That's what the actual nonprofits are for, this long-term change. I'm just that kickoff that they need. So that's another example of a local project I did in Detroit.
So going back internationally now, the question on the app was, how do you work through the language barrier and choose the individuals that you work with in these different countries?
It's a great question. Who asked that question? All right. So that's like you're thinking, because most people don't really go there in their head. But so far I've walked with 5 women for Walk a Mile. None of them have spoken English. So I have a translator with us during the day to translate. We interview them, and I get it translated after. And the way that I pick the local women, so Gisela, who you saw in the video, she doesn't speak English. She comments on my Facebook wall sometimes, so if you guys become my Facebook friend, you'll see her commenting, but she just does it in emojis because she doesn't speak English. Yeah, it's so cute. But I contact the nonprofits. So I pick the nonprofits first, and then they select a woman for me to feature. So for the one in Detroit, the empowerment plan. So I talk to Veronica and I say, pick out your best woman for me to feature. And then that's how I find those stories. I would never be able to track down this one woman in a village somewhere who doesn't speak my language and have her open to working with me. So the nonprofits provide that liaison for me.
Great. Well, that is all the time we have. Mallory, thank you so much. And thank you all for coming.